I'm Brandi Cruz. Today on Undivided, why did the state of Washington obstruct police efforts to investigate drug trafficking inside a juvenile detention center? Also, pro-Israel protesters gather to combat hate on the UW campus. And dishonest political ads go both ways. All of that and more coming up today on Undivided. Also, a reminder, make sure to join us tomorrow night for our live election night coverage right here, starting at 8:30 p.m. after the first ballots drop. Undivided is a people-powered podcast. Support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Jay Inslee has some explaining to do, not only Jay Inslee, but the government entity that is in charge of running our juvenile detention facilities. We talked about on the show, about a month and a half, 2 months ago, about what's happening at Green Hill School, which is just a fancy name for a juvenile detention facility in Chehalis. And there have been problems at juvie facilities across the state for some time, from escapes to violent attacks on guards. But there have been some really ingrained issues at this particular school. I should stop calling it a school because it's not a school. It's a juvie center. And it centers around really narcotics and some employees at the facility being embedded in sort of this criminal element inside Green Hill. So a couple months ago, we talked about this press release and this warrant that was served by the Joint Narcotics Enforcement Team led by the Centralia and Chehalis Police Departments. And what they uncovered was startling inside this school. I mean, narcotics, they were getting little to no cooperation from the actual facility itself in trying to weed out criminal conduct. I mean, they've had stories there of guards sleeping with inmates. They've had, in one instance, efforts to get a handgun into the facility. I mean, it's really wild stuff. So this story comes out a couple weeks ago, and then King 5 News and the investigator, so Chris Ingalls, he drops over the weekend this in-depth investigative report on this ordeal and focuses really on what, by all accounts, seems like obstruction from the state of Washington, from Governor Jay Inslee, when it comes to this criminal investigation. Here's a story from King 5.
Why wouldn't the State Department of Children, Youth, and Families, which runs juvenile facilities, cooperate? We took that question right to the top.
They had to get a search warrant to go inside a government agency. Mm-hmm. It sounds crazy.
Law enforcement did raise some issues. I think there was some miscommunication that occurred that was really unfortunate.
Washington Governor Jay Inslee and DCYF dispute that there is a lack of cooperation with police and that a search warrant was even necessary.
Yeah, it's unusual. There was some miscommunication. If they called a little higher in the food chain, I think that would have got resolved.
But here's the thing. The King 5 investigators obtained this letter sent directly to Governor Inslee by Lewis County leaders 2 months before JNet sought a search warrant. A reply came weeks later. The governor's office is declining to refer this matter to the Attorney General's office for further investigation.
They felt like they were brushed off.
Well, I can assure you that we have made improvements there, in part because some of these concerns have been raised.
That is not the case. Nothing has been corrected, and which is incredibly frustrating.
So first of all, Inslee is caught in a lie, and I don't know exactly when, because Chris Ingalls, he does these deep investigative stories, and so I don't know when that interview with the governor took place. But here's the thing. We've known since at least September 7th, because the Chehalis Police Department put it out there. They called the governor's office out on this. On September 7th, they had taken to their social media and said, hey, we sent the governor's office a letter months ago, and we asked them to investigate it. And what did they do? They sent us a letter back saying no. They posted this on their social media page on September 7th. We covered it on this show the following Monday, September 11th. And he's saying, well, you know, they didn't need, Chris is like, why did they need a search warrant? Why did police need a search warrant to be able to go into a state-run juvenile detention facility? When they came to the state and said, hey, here's what's going on. Don't you think the state would have said, hey, yeah, go in there. We don't want drugs being trafficked in our juvie center. We don't want employees having sexual relationships with these prisoners. Don't you think a well-run state agency would say, absolutely, police, go in there and do what you need to do. But no, they obstructed a police investigation. And when Chris Ingalls asked Jay Inslee this, Jay Inslee says, well, they didn't need a, this must have been a miscommunication. They didn't need a search warrant. They should have sent their request higher up the food chain. Only for Chris Ingalls to pull out the receipts and say they did. They sent you a letter months ago asking for you to refer this issue to the Attorney General's office to investigate. You sent them a letter back saying no. So what the hell do you mean that they should have put it further up the food chain? They put it as high up the food chain in Washington State as you could freaking go. They sent it to your office and you turned them away. And they had to get a search warrant to weed out obvious criminal conduct in a state-run juvenile detention facility, as if improving training of security guards is going to stop them from engaging in sex, from bringing in drugs, from bringing in guns or whatever other contraband. I'm sorry, you can't train that out of someone. You can't train criminal conduct out of someone. You have to weed it out with a criminal investigation. You have to put people behind bars. So this is the question here. To what extent is the governor's office, is the Department of Youth and Families culpable for the criminal conduct happening, not only inside this juvenile detention facility, but others? There have been a plethora of problems. It's not just Green Hill. And they want to turn away and say, oh, well, you didn't need a search warrant. Tell Chris Ingalls, King 5, they didn't need a search warrant. They should just send it higher up the food chain. When they already sent it as high up the food chain as it went. Absolutely ridiculous. There needs to be a full-fledged investigation. The legislature, both sides need to call for it. Because again, you know, and they want to be hands-off with these kids, these minors and juveniles who, you know, commit criminal acts and wind up in one of these facilities, whatever. But at the end of the day, you allowing this criminal conduct to occur, it hurts those kids. It hurts those juveniles. What do you think is going to happen to them if they're using drugs behind bars, if someone, a guard helps sneak in a firearm, et cetera? You think that's good for them? You think that's good for their rehab? You think that's good to make sure that they get out and don't commit other crimes? So what is the end goal here of brushing off police who come to you and say there are serious concerns in a state-run facility and you need to investigate? What does Jay Inslee get out of that? And I have to say, you know, either it's incompetence or flat-out obstruction, but it might be even more than that. It might be they genuinely don't care. It might be that they know that there's one party in power, voters keep putting the same people back in office, and they really know that there are no electoral consequences for this kind of behavior, for this kind of lack of oversight, and for obstructing a police investigation into a juvenile detention facility. So it's really just wild, wild stuff. All right, we've talked a lot on the show about these pro-Hamas rallies that are happening in Washington State with increased frequency. And yes, I think there have been some pro-Palestine rallies. And the difference being, you know, you have people who are just generally pacifists and want to come out and say, hey, you know, for innocent women and children in Palestine, you know, Israel has to be more cautious in protecting innocent life. But then there's people who are like, we don't want Israel to exist as a state. And yeah, we don't want these, what do they say, these Zionist counter-protesters to exist, et cetera, et cetera. And so people who really are pro-Hamas and want Jewish people to be killed and not to exist. So that's very, very different. So I was happy to see, I don't know why it took so long, but I was happy to see there was this massive pro-Israel rally at the University of Washington. And I think that campus honestly just needed that. There was like 500 people there. This is a picture from Jim Walsh. He's the state GOP chairman who showed up. And I think it was really good to be able to see this outpouring of support. You know, I remember back to the initial images of, you know, Jewish students crying on campus when you had these people celebrating really what Hamas had done in the rapes and murders of innocent Jewish young people at a music festival. And so I think to get people out there, and I will also say, our friend Andy Stevens was out at the rally and he posted a video. And I just want you to think about how different the whole vibe is, how much more peaceful and I would say non-hate filled the vibe at this rally was than what we've seen previously. Basically, basically just saying, bring them home. Yeah, we want to make sure that Americans, that Jewish people who are being held by Hamas are brought home. I mean, the whole vibe was different. I was just comparing it. I went back and watched some of the rally videos that we watched from the pro-Hamas crowd, night and day.
We don't want Israel to exist. We don't want these Zionist counter-protesters to exist.
Yeah, celebrating Hamas paragliders, absolutely ridiculous. So I'm glad that people came together. And there were also, you know, Christians there, pastors there who were speaking out, you know, in solidarity. And I thought it was just really nice that they kind of took back the campus and showed that, you know, there's been so much hate on campus. And so we want, you know, Jewish students and members of the Jewish community alike to know that that is not what UW is about, hopefully, and to have a big presence there. I also had to note, Nicole, did you see Macklemore over the weekend?
I did.
Macklemore. What's he doing? So Macklemore is in Washington, D.C., there was this big, quote, pro-Palestine gathering that he spoke at, which, again, I there were some people there who I think were genuine pacifists, and there were some people there who I think actually hate Jewish people and are anti-Semitic. So I don't know why Macklemore, a rapper, would feel the need to throw himself in that crowd. Again, not knowing, I think there was a mix of hate and pacifists in there. So he's tying himself to that. But you know the first time that I met Macklemore?
When?
The first time I met Macklemore was at
a rally.
Black Lives Matter rally in Seattle. This was pre-2020.
Right.
This was like pre-2020. And I think it was it Black Lives Matter? Yeah, I think it was, God, it got to be 5-6 years ago or something. When those first started popping up, right? Weakest handshake I've ever seen.
Oh, interesting.
So first of all, he's marching, and I don't think this particular rally was violent, but there had been some rallies around that time in Seattle that had turned into riots. And so here he is, you know, marching with the crowd. And I was, I don't know if I was a radio reporter still at the time or if I was with Fox 13. I mean, this is a while ago. And I go up to him and I just say, hey, you know, here's why I'm going to shake his hand. It was like, I kid you not.
That's
it was
the number
like,
one.
It was like, just a dead hand. And I was kind of like,
I mean, they teach that in high school, maybe middle school. That's like, not even like a college thing. Like shake your hand.
That was my first impression, but he was at a BLM rally. So here you have, you know, Macklemore, which, and honestly, I think that rally was before BLM was exposed as a complete fraud and like a money laundering scam. Well,
in this case, I just think that if you're going to put yourself in that specific position, I just don't get it because you better be an expert on the topic. And he's like, oh, I did my own research.
Sure you did.
But are you an expert? Because that's a big stance and it's a very divisive, very, very intricate, it seems like, fight battle to get into. And I just think that I'm not saying you have to stick to music or stick to whatever, but you better be an expert if you're that big of a figure and going to put yourself on one side of an issue that's that divisive and this, I mean, deadly right now.
Yeah, and I mean, take a stance, that's fine. Like you said, I don't, what was the phrase, shut up and dribble? I don't believe in that at all. And I certainly think you can have political positions and celebrities on both sides do, but also there is a lot of daylight between someone who's a pacifist and someone who's pro-Hamas. And so I think if you're going to come out as a celebrity and stake your position, you better damn well make sure that you are being very specific about what you support and what you don't support, because there has been a lot of mingling and gray area that people have allowed at these rallies. Like even the ones in Seattle at Westlake Park, there were some people who genuinely were up speaking, talking about, hey, we need, you know, their rationale for wanting a ceasefire and innocent Palestinians, et cetera. And then you've got people who are like, we don't want these Zionist counter-protesters to exist. So by being there, I do think that if you're not speaking out against that narrative, and you're there, then you're passively supporting it. And so, I mean, Macklemore, whatever.
I mean, if he was, I don't think he's Jewish. And if you maybe visit Israel here and there, or if you're very tied into that community, I say, okay, like I would give you some more cred on that. But if you're just going to look at the news and then do a little reading and decide that you're an expert and can go lead marches in front of the White House, I'm like, That's risky.
Well, and also, did you see some of them were like scaling the White House fence?
Yes.
I'm sorry. If those were right wingers, they would have been mm-hmm. shot dead. And there would be calls for, you know, putting them in federal prison for 30 years. I don't know. I tend to think that they would have. Mm-hmm. Anyway, okay. You do you, McLemore, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that it necessarily helps or hurts his reputation. His reputation is what it is. All right. Coming up next, Jeff Bezos is making a big move out of Seattle to Miami. We'll talk about the reasons why he says he's moving and the reasons why I think he's moving coming up. But first, we've been talking about First Mark Insurance. I continue to hear from those of you who have taken the First Mark Challenge on our advice and got fantastic results. Basically, it's going to entail you setting aside a little bit of time to talk to First Mark about your current insurance, about your insurance needs. They'll go out, they'll shop the market for you, they do it all for free, come back and make their recommendations. Dave Taylor, the CEO of First Mark, he says, yeah, you know, we have a lot of people coming to us looking to save money, but then they find out that there's a lot more that we bring to the table.
We like to talk about there's three elements to a really healthy insurance program. Yeah. It's having the right coverage. It's having the right coverage at a competitive rate. And it's having the service behind it when you need it, right? So all three things are really important. However, people are bombarded with the message of price, right? So when people reach out to us, it's okay that they all pretty much reach out and say, hey, mm-hmm. I want to see if I can save some money.
And can you do it in 15 minutes or less?
Yeah, yeah.
No.
And the answer is no.
No, we can't. Okay. No. Yeah, they're not going to do it in 15 minutes or less, but the product that you're going to get and the service that you're going to get is much better. And it's not quick, by the way. I should note, you know, when I did the First Mark Challenge, it was several weeks of them going out, shopping the market, looking what we had, what we needed. And so, yeah, it is a time investment. It's not going to be overnight, but it is something that is going to save us time and energy when it comes to our insurance needs for years to come. So it absolutely pays off in the long run. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com, they work for you. All right, Jeff Bezos has announced that he is leaving Washington State. He has built a lot of wealth here, a huge business here, and he now says it's time for him to leave, and he is moving to where else? He's moving to Florida. Let's talk about really the tax implications of this, because I think that's what a lot of people are focused on. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So Jeff Bezos, he shares on Instagram, and it was a very heartfelt post, and it's so interesting to look at where Amazon began, you know, in his garage and how he built it over time and also what he looked like back then. He looks completely different, but he posted on Instagram a old picture of him when he'd first started Amazon.com. And he said, Seattle's been my home since 1994 when I started Amazon out of my garage. That's my dad behind the camera in this video. It's the video he posted on Instagram. Touring Amazon's first office. My parents have always been my biggest supporters. They recently moved back to Miami, the place we lived when I was younger. I want to be close to my parents and Lauren, who is his partner. And I love Miami. Also, Blue Origin's operations are increasingly shifting to Cape Canaveral. For all that, I'm planning to return to Miami, leaving the Northwest. I've lived in Seattle longer than I've lived anywhere else and have so many amazing memories here. As exciting as the move is, it's an emotional decision for me. Seattle, you would always have a piece of my heart. And look, if that's why he says he's moving, then maybe that is truly why he's moving, that he has family there. He wants to be close to family. He's not the CEO of Amazon anymore. It gives him a little bit of latitude to be out of the Seattle area, certainly. So I'll take him at his word that that's why he's moving. But certainly, it is also a blow to Washington State's capital gains tax, which is, by the way, an income tax. I know that the Washington State Supreme Court has said, no, it's not. Every other state and the IRS say a tax on capital gains is an income tax. But somehow Democrats in Washington State were able to get through what is an illegal tax. They got the state's highest court to uphold it. And they made this from the very beginning about taxing Washington's richest residents. And like many other things, it was really designed to be a tax on people like Jeff Bezos. I mean, that's who they wanted to focus on, and that's who they wanted the public to believe they were focusing, although there's a lot of other people in Washington State who are now being impacted by the tax on capital gains. But that was really what this was about. And now Jeff Bezos leaving is going to dramatically reduce the amount of money that Washington State is going to pull into its coffers from the tax on capital gains. And the Bipartisan Tax Foundation, which is a national foundation that looks at tax policy, et cetera, this is the first thing that they talked about. They said in a post, Jeff Bezos' move undercuts proposed Washington State wealth tax. And in it, they talked about the fact that Bezos, in terms of how much Amazon stock he had sold previously, and if he were to sell it under the capital gains tax, by moving to Florida, not only is he avoiding paying a lot of taxes, but he's also he's keeping a lot of his own money away from Washington state government. So the Tax Foundation said Bezos sold about $15.7 billion worth of Amazon stock between 2020 and 2021, according to news reports. If we assume that Bezos, who other than the symbolic purchase of one share last year, has not purchased any shares of Amazon in decades, he's held on to these shares since the IPO, he saved nearly $1.1 billion in taxes by selling those shares before the new state capital gains tax went into effect. Whether or not it was a motivating factor, relocating to Florida ensures that future sales won't be subject to Washington's new capital gains tax either. And we're talking about potentially billions of dollars that by virtue of him moving to Florida, if he were to continue to sell that level of Amazon stock, billions of dollars potentially that Washington state is not going to collect through its what really is an illegal tax on capital gains. Noelle Frame, who is one of the chief Democratic lawmakers, State Senator Noelle Frame, who crafted the capital gains tax, she responded to this and acted like, oh, no big deal. We don't really care if Jeff Bezos leaves the state. She said, that revenue estimates from a potential wealth tax in Washington state won't change as they've already accounted for some degree of taxpayer mobility and avoidance behavior. I love how Jeff Bezos, first of all, before I read the rest of this, Jeff Bezos isn't just any regular taxpayer. Like they've accounted for some degree of taxpayer mobility and avoidance behavior. I mean, we're talking about Jeff Bezos leaving the state. And so you know, downplaying the significance of that, I think is kind of funny. But she said, we should tax, and she says, no, this is moving forward. This doesn't change anything for us. We should tax wealth and reinvest those dollars in amenities that attract early stage entrepreneurs to our state so they lay down roots here and raise their families and build their wealth. That's what the data tells us. And that's exactly what Bezos did with Amazon. Precisely. That doesn't make any sense to me because that is exactly what Jeff Bezos did with Amazon. He built that company from nothing. And what did you do when that company became a resounding success? You vilified him. You carved out taxes that really were specifically to punish him for the success of his company. And now you're saying that the money that you get from people or would have got from people like Jeff Bezos, that you should tax that wealth and reinvest the dollars in amenities that attract early stage entrepreneurs. Why would you think that that would attract early stage entrepreneurs? Why would you think vilifying someone like Jeff Bezos, vilifying someone like Amazon, finding carve-outs around the Constitution to tax their wealth would in any world attract entrepreneurs to Washington state? That way of thinking doesn't make any sense to me. And to me, you know, and again, I'll take Jeff Bezos at his word that he just likes Miami better and that's where his family is, etc. But if he moved to avoid the taxes, is that a really surprise to anyone? You know, and Democrats were warned about this when they were pushing the tax on capital gains. Like, these people are going to just move out of state. And they said, well, no, you're not going to move out of state due to tax policy. But of course that happens. Look at it on a smaller scale. Look what happened with Amazon in Seattle. When the Seattle City Council passed its tax on high-paying jobs in the summer of 2020, which was really intended to be a tax on Amazon, what did Amazon do? Amazon started to move jobs, high-paying jobs, to Bellevue. That's the same principle. Amazon was targeted out for a tax, and they realized that, hey, we can move those jobs, we can open those high-paying jobs 15 miles away, right across Lake Washington, and we don't have to pay a tax on high-paying jobs that the city council has carved out to punish us for our success, to punish us for the high-paying jobs that we bring to the city that supports an entire ecosystem of good-paying working-class jobs. And so, you know, the idea that you have state lawmakers that continue to believe that they can single out industries, they can single out people for taxation, and those individuals are just going to sit down and take it, that's not realistic. That's not how the world works. So Jeff Bezos, I do hope that you enjoy Miami. I am very partial to Miami as well, as you know. Maybe we can get Jeff Bezos on for one of our editions of Florida Report from Miami. I'm sure you'll enjoy the sun. But I also think the appropriate response to Jeff Bezos leaving is twofold. I think it is to really be grateful and in awe of what he built here. and what he did economically for the state of Washington. Is Amazon, and has Amazon's presence here created challenges when it comes to cost of living, et cetera? Yes. But overall, to look at what this man did from his garage and what he built Amazon into is absolutely worthy of celebration. Not vilification, not demonization, not criticism. And so I think that absolutely should be something we're discussing when it comes to him after all these years moving to Miami. But also a conversation we have to have is, do you as a state want to continue to push tax policy that punishes people for success? Is that the state we want to be? And is that the kind of politics and the kind of policy that is going to lead to long-term success here? I tend to think no. And also, you hear Democrats in our state talk so much about our backward tax system, how the rich are paying way less as a percentage of their income than the poor, and I agree with that. I do agree with that. But look at the ways that Democrats try to, quote-unquote, fix that, right? When you look at the carbon tax, which really is a gas tax, that has now amounted to about 50 cents per gallon, that is a tax that hurts the working class more. And so they want to complain about the backward tax structure, but they continue to push policies that are resulting in a larger burden on the poor and on the working class. So that's just blatantly disingenuous. All right, Jeff Bezos, good luck in Miami. Have a little Mai Tai for all of us. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, last week on the show, we talked about some absolutely ridiculous campaign flyers. Both of them that we discussed on the show last week were Democrat flyers that were against Republican candidates. But as we know, both parties are guilty of it. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right. So this takes us down to Pierce County to a school board race and to State Senator Twyna Nobles. So Twyna Nobles is a Democrat in the State Senate, and I've talked about her a lot on the show as it pertains to what I think is policies she's what I think are policies she supported that have eroded public safety. There are a lot of very specific reasons why I have been critical of Senator Twyna Nobles. You know, she has defended the failed police pursuit policy that made it nearly impossible for police to pursue suspects. And I also think that she is someone who weaponizes race. I really do. She's a black woman, and I think she is someone who has, and for the record, there's a lot of white Democrats that weaponize race as well. I think she is someone who has weaponized race. So she's running for a school board seat down in Pierce County. And this is a flyer from the that was paid for by the Washington State Republican Party, okay? It says, Twyna Nobles is controversial. Here's that word, controversial again. I don't like the word controversial unless you have, you know, you're going to follow it up with specifics. We talked about it with Adam Fortney last week, like he's controversial. Okay, look, let's talk about the reasons. And I agree that she's controversial, but let's talk about the reasons why. So they said, Twyna Nobles is running to remain on our school board. And Nicole, I should have looked this up. What is the school board she's running for again? I forget. It's a, is it University Place? I think it is. I think it's University Place. Sorry. Twyna Nobles is running to remain on our school board, even though she was elected to the state Senate. It's legal, but that doesn't make it right. Despite being elected to represent our entire community, Noble's social media is full of extremist viewpoints dealing with race, gender, school curriculum, gatekeeping black identity, and expressly bigoted views about whites. And they included a social media post that she put up saying there's nothing worse than, quote, people of color, especially white passing, sabotaging social justice work by validating and upholding white male culture. It is not serving people of color, in this case, black folks at all. Okay. So anyway, they also include this picture of her where she's got a shirt on that says Make Black Count and she's got her hand up in a fist. All right, so there are a few things in this flyer that I agree with. Again, it was paid for by the Washington State Republican Party. I do agree that she has some extreme viewpoints when it comes to issues of race, issues of gender, some of the topics that we've discussed with school boards, like in the Olympia School District, that I don't think have any place in education of our kids. And I also, as I said, I have talked about what I view as her extreme viewpoints on criminal justice issues pertaining to her role as a Washington State Senator. But what I have an issue with, and Nicole, can you bring that flyer back up? What I have an issue with, and what I think is one of the dumbest things you can do on a campaign flyer, is to accuse the other side of doing something that you yourself are doing. That doesn't make any sense, because then somebody's going to come back at you and be like, well, you guys do that too. And it has to do with this first paragraph. Twyna Nobles is running to remain on our school board, even though she was elected to the state Senate. It's legal, but that doesn't make it right. So here you have the Washington State Republican Party basically saying she's in the state Senate. So why is she running for school board as well? That's legal to hold two elected positions. And they say, but that doesn't make it right. The only problem is this is a very common practice. This is a fairly common practice. And in most places, there isn't a law against it. And honestly, I'm kind of split on how I feel about it, but the reality is that serving in the Washington State Legislature isn't a full-time position. That's not a full-time legislature. So almost everyone, unless you're super rich or retired, who is a member of the state Senate or the state House, they have another job. They might be a farmer. They might be a banker. They might be a business owner. They have other jobs. And I kind of like that because it keeps them connected to their community, to issues facing their community, in a way that if you're just spend all your waking hours in Olympia, in a way that I think that allows you to get a little disconnected. So I like that it's a part-time legislature. I like that they have to have other jobs on the side. I like that you have the experience from those other jobs that you bring into your job in the legislature. You know, for instance, if you're a teacher or something, or if you're a doctor or a business owner, et cetera, and you can say, hey, here's my experience with these things when you're serving in the state legislature. So I don't think it particularly bothers me. But again, we can have debates about whether someone should be able to hold two elected positions. It doesn't change the fact that Republicans have done it too. I find it very odd that you have the Washington State Republican Party saying it's legal, but that doesn't make it right. There are multiple examples of Republicans who have done that or are doing that. Sam Lowe, who is a Washington State representative, a Republican. He also serves on the Snohomish County Council. He does both of them at once. And so it's just weird to me that all the things that exist for you to, in an attack ad, I guess, attack Twyna Nobles about, and I think there is no shortage of it. I really do believe that there is, you can get into specifics about her viewpoints on public safety, about things she said about race that you don't think have a place on a school board, without you having to include something that Republicans have done and are doing, serving in two elected positions at once. What's the point of that? So anyway, I reached out to Jim Walsh, who's the chair of the Washington State Republican Party. I just sent him a text earlier because we're going to talk about that story today. And I said, I'm looking for comment on this. I said, does the Washington GOP have the same opinion on Sam Lowe? And I just use Sam as an example when it comes to serving in two positions is legal, but that doesn't make it right. I said, does WGOP have the same opinion on Sam Lowe? What I was told in response, every situation should be judged on its own merits. Nobles' long history of racist rhetoric makes her particularly unqualified to sit on a school board that has broad discretionary power to determine how children are educated. Sam Lowe and Strom Peterson, it was another example, don't have such history, and their dual elected positions are more complementary than conflicted. That's ridiculous. I mean, you get to decide like what positions, if you're going to serve in the state legislature, there are some positions that complement that and there's some that don't, and the school board doesn't. What you're basically saying is you don't want Twyna Nobles and you don't think she's suited for the school board. Fine, focus on that. Don't focus on the fact that, well, she also serves as a state senator. Yeah, Republicans do it too. So it's that kind of stuff that's just stupid to me, but it's also, it relies on what I think is a reality that a lot of voters aren't going to double check that. That a lot of voters are going to see that and say, you're right. Why is she serving in two elected positions at once when they don't realize that people from both parties have done that for some time? So I think that you can be honest, you can be intellectually honest, and you can go after Twyna Nobles on the merits and on her policy positions without including something like this. One other aspect on this I want to talk about. Nicole, can you put the picture back up for me? So the state Democratic Party is taking issue with the picture they used of Twyna Nobles. So if you're listening on the podcast, again, it's a picture of her. She says, make black count. That's what's on her t-shirt. And she has a fist raised. And they're saying that this flyer has intentionally darkened her skin. And they're saying that that's racist. That's so ridiculous. Look, here's the thing. Have you ever seen a campaign mailer that's an attack mailer that has a picture of the person who's being attacked that they haven't manipulated in some way? They always make it like dark or red, or pick like the ugliest picture of that person imaginable, the most unflattering picture imaginable. And I've talked about it on the show before. I think Kim Schreier was one, Congresswoman Kim Schreier, who was always the subject of that. She's a pretty lady. And they use these just horrendous photos of her. So you see this in ads on TV. You see it in mailers where they're going to darken it. They're going to turn it red. They're going to make the person look evil and dark and scary. And in this case, it happens to be a black woman. So when they darken it, it does make her skin more dark. Do I think that's inherently racist? No, because you would be fine with them darkening a white person's skin to make it them look spookier and scarier. So to me, that's just a manufactured, like, oh, racism. There is something wrong with this flyer that is just factually wrong and factually kind of fear-mongering, and I think we can focus on that without making it about race. So that's ridiculous. Republicans, you don't get off the hook. You don't get off the hook for ridiculous mailers. Everyone should be focusing on concrete, specific examples that you think make someone unfit for office or the worst of two candidates for office. And there's plenty out there without you having to manufacture some sort of controversy. Unbelievable. All right, I'm going to talk about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. I just heard, I got an email from a woman who said she did not only First Mark now, but also Eastside Weight Loss Clinic and lost 40 pounds over the summer on Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I've lost about 40 pounds on the program. I started this time last year, lost almost 30 pounds before the end of the year. So you really do get quick results if you stick to the program. It is not magic. It is a very structured program, but if you stick to it, you can lose a substantial amount of weight in just 2 months, like I did and like so many others have done. So if you're interested in trying the program, no pre-packaged meals, no injections, no drugs, no strenuous workout routine. They just teach you what to eat in the right portions and how to maintain that weight loss for life. Schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team at eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right, dipping outside of Washington State, Gavin Newsom taking a page out of Governor Jay Inslee's gaslighting on gas prices. It's like they just call each other, how can we spin this? So we know that Washington State and California and usually Hawaii, they kind of lately have been going back and forth with who has the highest gas prices in the nation. Typically it's California, but Washington State over the summer was the highest in the nation for a short period of time. And who did Jay Inslee blame? Because he didn't want to blame his carbon tax, right? But even before the carbon tax, which went into effect at the beginning of the year, Washington still had some of the highest gas prices in the country. Why? It's because our gas tax is very high. And the same is true in California. That is why those states continuously have some of the highest gas prices in the nation, even before the cap and trade program. But the carbon tax and that program made things even worse. So when Jay Inslee, you know, couldn't deny that the carbon tax was going to raise gas prices, what did he do? Remember, he blamed greedy gas and oil companies. Oh, they're just sticking it to us for what? For no reason. And that's what Gavin Newsom is saying now. From the office of the governor of California, big oil is fleecing Californians. It's not right. Instead of passing down savings to consumers, big oil companies like Shell use their massive profits on share buybacks that benefit Wall Street. Meanwhile, and a lot of people pointed out what they pointed out here when Jay Inslee said the same thing. Okay, so big oil just wants to fleece like West Coast states. They just have it out for us. Because you look at other states in the union, Texas has some of the, I think right now, the lowest gas prices, $2.89 a gallon. Can you imagine? Oh, $2.89 a gallon. Wouldn't that be nice? Georgia, Mississippi, Louisiana. And then you look at the highest, California, Hawaii, Washington, Nevada, Oregon. Oh, is it just that big oil really hates West Coast states? Oh, they're just fleecing us? No, it's because we have high gas taxes. And it raises the cost at the pump. And again, this is similar to, you know, these dishonest campaign ads that we'll see, is this is about avoiding responsibility, not being willing to own your policies. Look, if you think your policies are the right thing to do, then you just stand behind them and you just tell people, yeah, it's going to make gas more expensive. But you don't want to do that. You can't do that because expensive gas is really deeply unpopular with people on both sides of the aisle. So what do? Oh, you blame a big, scary, giant oil and gas company, and you blame it on them, even though it's very obvious who is to blame for high gas prices. So Gavin Newsom and Jay Inslee, they just cannot take responsibility for the gas prices. All right, there was a story I saw, and actually it came across my timeline in the form of a tweet from the Seattle Times. And initially, I was really annoyed by it. And now I don't know if I'm annoyed by it as much. And so I wanted to talk through it because I also made it the subject of today's daily subscriber poll. So here's the initial tweet that came across from the Seattle Times. Americans like sharing bad economic news way too much. Pessimism could become self-fulfilling if consumers retrench out of concern for what might lie ahead or businesses hold off on investments. So I read that and I'm like, okay, so they're complaining not about the state of the economy, but they're complaining about the fact that Americans complain about the state of the economy. Like, Americans have a right to complain about the economy, about their dollar not going as far, about gas prices. And so that seemed just very weird and tone deaf to me. But so I read the article, and it's actually a Bloomberg opinion article that was just reprinted by the Seattle Times. The headline, Americans like sharing bad economic news way too much. It says, one would think that all the spending, the additional wealth, and an unemployment rate holding below 4% since early 2022 would merit a mention when people talk about the economy, but they rarely do. Instead, Americans are deeply pessimistic, with over 40% more people expecting the economy to be worse in the next 5 years than better. That's even gloomier than the aftermath of the global financial crisis and Great Recession in 2010, when unemployment exceeded 9%. This is a problem because all the pessimism could become self-fulfilling if consumers retrench out of concern for what might lie ahead or businesses hold off on investments. And so their general argument is that Americans, especially in the social media age, are much more likely to share negative economic news, and that negative economic news spreads on social media much more quickly than positive economic news. Now, one thing I'll say about just the general thesis in this Bloomberg opinion piece is I still think it doesn't account for the reality of what Americans have been through over the past 5 years. You know, we went through this, and really more so the past 3 years, you know, we went through a pandemic that had never occurred in our lifetimes, where our lives were completely turned upside down, where people's businesses went under, where people lost their jobs. I mean, this once in a century experience. You had a lot of unrest in the country in 2020. We had a ground war that began in Europe for the first time in a long time. Now we have what's happening in the Middle East. So there's a lot to be pessimistic about. And I don't think I blame anyone, even if your financial situation has not changed, right? Even if you've had the same job that you've had for, let's say, 5 years, and your actual finances haven't changed. You've been hit really hard by inflation, so your money isn't going as far. But also, you're faced with all these really horrible things that have happened or are happening, like the pandemic, like the, let's just say, crime crisis that's happening across the country, like two wars that are raging overseas. And so, yeah, I think you are going to have people feel a certain way about that and be more cautious about what they do with their money to say, hey, the world is weird right now. Like, maybe I'm not going to go out on a limb and make these big purchases that I would have otherwise made, et cetera. So I think the article, the underlying thesis might be correct, that people spread bad economic news more because it impacts them more, right? If the economy is just chugging along and you're doing your thing and you're not being hurt by it, that makes sense that people wouldn't be so eager to go out and be like, hey, you know, here's where things are at. Things are doing great. I think it's just a human nature. But I want to make this the subscriber poll question today because I was very curious for you personally, what really dictates, you know, what kind of economic news that you share. And so the question that I asked subscribers this morning, are you more likely to share stories with good economic news or bad economic news, good or bad? So I gave folks three options. I said good, bad, or good if my party's in power, bad if the other party's in power. Because I think that's also true, right? Like gas prices, for instance. Like I said, if gas prices are high, that's not particularly good for a president. So if you don't like the president, you might be more eager to share news that gas prices are high. Whereas if you do like the president and gas prices are high, you might be more eager to find excuses why gas prices are high, like we saw with Biden in 2020 before the midterms. I was surprised by how many people actually chose that option. And we'll keep the poll results. We'll keep the poll open all week. But 27% right now are saying good if my party's in power, bad if the other party's in power. That's very honest. You guys, that's honest, because I think that's true for a lot of people. But the majority of people will, plurality, is that what you say? A plurality. 44% say, yeah, I'm more likely to share bad economic news. But I think the question is, how does that then translate? Does it become a self-fulfilling prophecy? One, I think there's a lot of realistic reasons to believe that there might be a recession on the horizon, but does that speed it up or does it make it worse if you have people who are very, very pessimistic? And so I'll tell you what, coming up on Thursday's show when we have Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital in every Thursday, this is what I'm going to ask him about. I want to ask him about the thesis of this Bloomberg opinion article and whether he thinks that actually could speed up a recession or contribute to it in a meaningful way. So continue to submit your answers to that poll question. Actually, I want to read some responses from subscribers here. Anne says, I would have to say both and agree with the statement that when something is very high, husband says, thanks, Joe. Yeah, thanks, Joe. You might say if you get to the gas pump and it's really high. I remember that was they were those stickers in 2022 with Joe Biden. It said, I did that on the gas prices. Matt said, economic numbers are just a tool to prop up or tear down someone. I personally care about my own economic numbers more than the national numbers. I agree with that sentiment as well. I think it's what kind of pressures are you feeling personally? E said, I share all the news equally. I don't belong to a party, so that makes no difference. Unfortunately, I don't see very much good news in the U.S. I see more good things on UK, Germany, Irish, Australian, Norwegian, Finnish, and Swedish news. Switzerland usually has the most good news. Also, get more truth about the U.S. reading other countries' news. That's true. I watch the BBC for that reason. Chris said, I had to do some internal inventory, and I guess I only share bad news because it usually ticks me off. I love that Chris is like, I'm going to be very introspective in this poll response. H said, I would like to see a poll that asks us if we voted for Biden and now regret it. Maybe that poll will be on the horizon. All right. So speaking about Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital, again, I'm going to have him on Thursday, as we always do, and I'll ask him about this very topic. It's like, are we hastening a recession by sharing bad economic news on the show every week? But first, I wanted to remind you that he's going to have another seminar on risk coming up soon. It's free, one of his webinars. So if you're retired now, or if you're heading toward retirement, it's really important to assess whether your portfolio is positioned for a successful retirement. I mean, you work so hard for what you have. You want to make sure that it can last in retirement, and risk management in this environment and with the state of the economy has never been more important. So join Bulwark Capital, Zach Abraham and his team, for their final live webinar of the year. It's coming up on Thursday, November 16th. You can learn about their risk management strategy and how active management could potentially lower your portfolio's volatility. So what will happen on this webinar? Well, Zach is going to explain how the core of Bulwark Capital's investment and retirement planning process is protecting retirement portfolios against loss. It's a fully transparent look into the Bulwark Capital investment strategy, showing what strategy has done over 2022 as well as previous years. So you can see their performance, see their outcomes for other people, learn about their risk investment strategy, and it's free, again, to attend. So the final live webinar of the year, Thursday, November 16th at 3 p.m. Pacific time. Space is limited, fills up fast, so reserve now at knowyourriskradio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. All right, let's get to questions and comments from the live stream. Brandon Robillard said, concerning the juvenile center, like in my opinion, greeting about war. Wait, what? Like in my opinion, greeting about war. It seems like they're playing both sides of the game, making money in rehabbing them and providing them drugs and weapons. Yeah, I guess. Lieutenant Dan says, going to push back on Nicole. Just because someone speaks out on an issue that is divisive doesn't mean they need to be an expert, just like how people concerned about vaccines were not experts. Yeah, I tend to agree with that, too. I don't think you have to be an expert in a topic. However,
I was talking about if you're famous. Like, I was specifically mentioning that you're a high-profile person, and if you, like, you better be educated. You better be the most educated an average citizen can be, if that's not your, your expertise.
Because you're going to face more scrutiny.
You're going to get people to latch on to you just because it's you saying it. You have this power that you have to use for good. And you better have it backed up by facts and a lot of research, not just reading.
That is, if you care enough about the impact you have on other people. You have to be a good citizen and understand, have that moral clarity to understand, hey, the position I take could actually have an impact on how other people think. If you're really famous, it could actually have an impact on the issue at hand. So do you accept the responsibility that comes with having that level of fame? I'm going to guess he probably doesn't.
See, I think he does. I think that's why he's a pretty vocal character. I mean, I think he wants to do good. I think that he isn't always, I think he's in an echo chamber. So,
oh yeah. A lot of people are limp handshake. Mm-hmm. Don't trust him.
Don't trust him.
I also want to know, I'm just going to know for clarity, if I've sounded off, it's because we're having a little weird audio issue in our ears.
Are you still hearing it?
It still sounds crazy. Hmm. So I'm like dealing with that while I'm trying to talk all episode today. We went through and adjusted audio. So it's just an adventure. So if I mm-hmm. sound just like off today, that's why. It's hard to talk while things are coming in your ear that are distracting you. However, we're professionals. But, you know, I just tell you guys everything. All right. On the rallies, you know, the pro-Israel rally versus what I characterized as pro-Hamas anti-Semitic rallies on UW, Y says the striking difference is the reason why it matters who you surround yourself with. I think Ben Shapiro said that Hamas is obsessed with death while Israel is obsessed with life. I think these clips of rallies and protests proves his point. I do too. You have people, and I'm not saying I didn't hear every single chant and read every single sign that was at this pro-Israel rally, but what I heard overwhelmingly is people talking about, you know, bring the hostages home, trying to protect the life of Jewish people in the Jewish state, whereas you saw in some of these other rallies specifically, we don't want these Zionist counter-protesters to exist. So that tells me you want them to die. So it's just this violent rhetoric compared to the rhetoric that I've seen at some of the pro-Israel. And again, like the hanging of the missing person posters. And then you see the pro-Hamas people tearing them down. What, if you're so concerned, if your concern is peace and innocent Palestinian life, then you could be putting up posters of missing or killed Palestinians. But you're not doing that. You're tearing down someone else's posters of missing or murdered Israelis. So it's this violent rhetoric that we're really seeing that is the difference to me. All right, let's see here. On Jeff Bezos moving to Miami, Kyle clued into what I clued into as well. He said, haha, they want their tax wealth. They want to tax wealth so low-level entrepreneurs mm-hmm. can build their wealth here just to have it taxed. Okay, exactly.
It doesn't make any sense.
Any sense.
And she doesn't really say what they are going to fund with that. Right. She says things that make it fun. Right. What things?
Yeah. Crafty Grandma Crispy. So they'll push harder for an income tax and lower the threshold for qualifying capital gains. Yeah. I mean, they're moving toward an income tax for everyone. Mm-hmm. That is the goal, right? That's what they wanted to do. They successfully got, again, the Washington State Supreme Court to agree to something that no other state in the IRS agreed to, which mm-hmm. is the capital gains tax, is not an income tax. They what do they characterize it as? Somebody's going to just off me for not being able to think about this. A excise tax.
Excise,
they say it's an excise tax. Absolutely not an income tax. On the flyers, Mo says recycle those flyers, garbage. What does
that's
he talk about?
That's the flyers, the political flyers, and that's your rule to throw them away.
You didn't mention
it. And she's like, where's the mention?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You recycle, straight in the recycle.
Straight in the recycling. When you get, I thought Mo was talking about the flyers of the missing Israelis. I was like, you think they're garbage? I was like, this is the wrong podcast for you, Mo. No, the political flyers. I don't understand. But here's the thing. We and that's the collective, mm-hmm. we, like everyone who watches this show, I think are willing to look at those independently and be like, okay, like, is this genuine or not? Even if you like or don't like the candidate who's being attacked. But I do think sometimes we fail to account for the regular Washingtonian who is not as hyper obsessed with politics as we are, who's getting those, and they might see that and be like, oh wow, you know, Adam Fortney is a right wing lunatic, you know?
And right. It's like, and okay. It's something that we should consider teaching children a little more thoroughly, because they should learn how to consume that kind of media and that kind of political right. propaganda.
But I also want one side, mm-hmm. in order for this situation to improve, one side has to commit itself to doing better. And they're not going to do that because the other side isn't committing itself.
Yeah.
So the truth is that these tactics work.
Yes.
They employ them because they work. Because you have most voters who aren't going to, they're going to look at that and be like, oh, that's scary. Oh, I'm not going to vote for that person. Not most, but a lot.
So maybe the thing is that we need the pushback to be harder than the...
Right. And it has to be, the pushback has to be hardest against the party that you identify with. And I'm not a Republican. But again, you know, and I reached out to Jim Walsh for comment, I think it's absolute baloney to be like, well, it's okay for some people to hold two elected offices. No. I mean, if you're going to say that it's... for her, it's not okay. It's legal, but it's not right. You have Republicans who are serving in two. So I think it takes the pushback to be more aggressive and for people to demand better of their own party and to call their own party out when they have blatantly disingenuous or when they have outright lies on their campaign material. Mm-hmm. I'm not holding my breath. Again, they use these tactics because they work, but on this show, it's equal opportunity. If you're going to lie, mislead, gaslight voters, mm-hmm. and we find out about it, we're probably going to call you out on it. And I think a lot of people who watch and listen to this show will as well. Okay, Shine the Light says, Brandi, when are you going to research and interview the Palestinian cause? We've reached out on a couple interviews of people who are more so on the side of a ceasefire and, you know, on the side of restoring Palestine. We haven't heard back. We're more than happy to have those conversations. Yeah. And again, I think that we've been clear that there is a legitimate conversation to be had about the innocent Palestinian lives that have been lost in all of this. And I think that's a much different conversation. But if you're telling me that I need to research and have someone on who wants the erasure of the state of Israel, I'm not gonna host that. I'm not gonna platform the calls for the erasure of the Jewish state. I'm just not going to do it because that's rooted in anti-Semitism. So I'm not gonna have some hate monger on the show. But if someone wants to come on the show and talk about, we've invited Congresswoman Jayapal on. If she wants to come on and talk about the need for a ceasefire and talk about innocent Palestinians and the duty of Israel, then yeah, sure, we can have that conversation. But we have reached out. I'm not gonna profile though some hateful individual who's out there talking about, oh, we don't want these Zionist counter protesters to exist. That's ridiculous. That's not a conversation I'm willing to have. Krista says, I don't think the Republican Party has ever had a problem calling out their own. Yeah, they have. I mean, they've done it, but I think the Republican Party has been, similar to Democrats, had a hard time calling out the fringes of their party. Maybe not to the extent that Democrats kowtow to the far left fringe, but you look at Donald Trump, who, you know, is just the death knell for candidates, Republican candidates on the ticket here, and I don't think that I've seen a forceful enough, I want to say condemnation, but desire to move on from that to a candidate who can actually win and not kill every single down ballot Republican. I think it's very common if you are entrenched in one of the two parties to give your party more leeway than you give the other party. All right. I think that's good for comments and questions today. Where am I on the show sheet? This ear thing's really thrown me off today. All right, we've been talking about the state of the economy, which also factors into the state of the real estate market. But it's interesting because prices, home sale prices are actually going up, which is very counterintuitive because of the state of the economy. I talked to our friend Wes Jones, longtime real estate agent in our area, about what's going on.
We should be experiencing not necessarily a crash, but we should be seeing a reduction in purchase price. When you have interest rates jump up by, you know, nearly 40% in over a 12-month time span, that should be compressing pricing, but we're actually seeing the opposite. Prices have come up about 5% since the beginning of the year. And overall transaction count is down, just meaning less houses overall are selling, but they're still selling pretty quickly because there's been a lot of pent up demand, you know, over time. So it's actually going pretty well, but in general, there are not enough homes on the market to meet demand.
Yeah, so if you've been thinking about putting your home on the market, you're not quite sure with the state of the economy, do this. Go to sellwithwest.com, reach out to Wes Jones. The very first thing he's going to do is give you a free market analysis so you can see how your home is positioned. He's also going to talk to you about their Listing Boost concierge service in case you might need any home updates before your home hits the market to make sure it absolutely wows potential home buyers. And while you're there, use their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, Election Day is tomorrow. Let's get to it in our closing sanity check. I'm going to keep the sanity check simple today. Vote. You absolutely have to get your ballots in. It's interesting. I posted this video over the weekend that was really simple. It was just me telling people, reminding people, hey, you don't need a stamp on your ballot. Make sure that it's postmarked by election day or you get in a ballot drop box by 8 p.m. on election night. And I still get people in the comments saying, my vote won't matter anyway. Or some shade of, oh, you know, the vote is going to be fraudulent. Somebody's going to tamper with it, et cetera. I don't like mail-in voting. I'm not going to vote until we go back in person. And it breaks my heart every single time, because the only way for sure that your vote isn't going to count is if your ballot is still sitting on your kitchen table come election day, when election day is over. And I understand that there are some people who want to go back to a different way of voting. And I understand some of the reasons and some of the rationale for that, but I don't see that happening in Washington State for the foreseeable future. In fact, I don't see it happening in my lifetime even. And so you have a decision to make. Do you want to try to support candidates you like within the current system, or do you want to sit it out and allow people who don't share your views, who don't share your values, to be the only ones who are voting? And so I think it would be insane to believe that it is a better course of action not to vote than to vote within our current system. It doesn't mean it's perfect. It doesn't mean you have to think it's perfect. But again, the only way for sure that your vote is not going to count is if you don't fill your ballot out and turn it in. So please do so. It needs to be postmarked by tomorrow, or it needs to be put into a ballot drop box by 8 p.m. A reminder, we are going to have live election coverage right here, wherever you watch the live weekly show, starting at 8:30 p.m. tomorrow. We'll still have our normal show at noon, and then we'll come back, and after the first ballot drop happens and we get a good handle on what has happened in some of the key races, we'll be on at 8:30 p.m. PT. So please join us for that. We can answer some of your questions live. So we will be here. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. If you are not a subscriber already, please sign up. Help position us for success in the upcoming major election year in 2024. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. You can sign up for just $5 a month.